Howdy, friends. Gardner Goldsmith here for LibertyConspiracy.com. Got a special podcast-only production for you right now, opening with Puny Human.
There's a narcissist talking in the air. Come from crazy horses riding everywhere.
This is Puny Human's cover of the Osmond song, Crazy Horses. Now, I've known about the Puny Human version of this for a number of years. And a couple things I didn't know was that two of the members of Puny Human are the Diamond Brothers, who actually did the three music videos for Danko Jones that are all part of the Ballad of Danko Jones. And they have people like Lemmy, Elijah Wood, and others in these films. And they're great filmmakers. They did a fantastic job. So in addition to the Diamond Brothers having this band, Puny Human, I didn't know that the Osmonds did this song originally in like 1972. So what I'm going to do is at the end of this pod, which is a special standalone podcast, a sort of mini debate between me and Sophia on Marxism, and I think you'll find it very valuable, and I don't want to sort of subsume the actual content of the podcast by talking so much about this particular song, but at the end of the pod, I'm going to give you a recorded version of the Osmonds doing this originally on television. And if you get a chance to see the video on YouTube, it's crazy. It's like out of control. Like, the Osmonds did this song? They wrote it. The Osmonds. It's like, what the heck, man? And it'll be in mono, but I think you'll like it anyway. And you really have to take the opportunity to go to YouTube and look up the Osmonds doing this song. So, as I mentioned, this production has been a long time coming. It's sort of part two in our conversation on the libertarian versus the Marxist collectivist point of view and why freedom, individual freedom, cannot coexist with the Marxist philosophy and either political philosophy or economics. And also, I think in this you'll see how there are many facets of Marxist collectivist ideology that don't allow for increasing living standards. So I want to thank Soph for offering Sophia's argument in favor of Marxism. And I want to thank you for listening to this. And I hope you'll spread the word, because I really appreciate those people. And I know some people have who spread the word on this. So thanks very much. And we'll say be seen. All right, now I have the opportunity to offer something that I've been looking forward to for a while, and it's in the vein of a friendly conversation between two people who have a couple different perspectives on political economics and political philosophy. And I want to bring in Sophia now from the UK. We have been discussing doing a separate standalone production on the idea of Marxism and whether or not this is something people should hope to strive for in their political systems, or it might be destructive. What did Marx really stand for, and does it bode well for people who believe in freedom? Is this really a good and fair way for people to operate? So Sophia is with me right now, and Soph, thank you and welcome to this extended, super awesome extendo podcast version of our conversation. All right.
Yeah, dude.
All right. And let's get your opinion now. What you mentioned to me that you would like for me to, sort of listen a little bit, do some research and so on. And I, you know, like I mentioned to you over on Twitter and so on, I've done a lot of reading on Marx and was forced to read a lot of Marx and Engels and Hegel and, you know, all these things. And then some of the neo-Marxists later. And so I would be very interested to get your view as to, can you explain to people why you think that Marxism is laudable, beneficial, and maybe explain some of the things that you think maybe they don't quite get about Marx?
Well, essentially, in the feudal system, a person would go out and harvest crops, and any surplus crops would go to the lord of the manor. Nothing much has changed, really, structurally. Sure, people have a choice of what job they do, but essentially they now sit in an office, and the surplus wealth they might create goes to the bosses, who usually get paid, you know, something like 100 to 400 times more than they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, essentially, why should someone's or someone who contributes their labour be giving over to someone who then uses their wealth to exploit them, mm-hmm. essentially. That is the question. Because people with, you know, we have a small amount of people with an awful lot of money, and they use that money to exploit people, to oppress people, to enslave them. You know, it's what we call corporatism.
Okay. All right. So corporatism as opposed to, and I just want to make sure we define our terms going into this, so if I want to make sure I do this. Corporatism as opposed is, would you define that as a synonym to free markets, or would you define that in a different way? And we can start to get to whether or not it might all devolve into that later. But do you believe that free markets are synonymous with corporatism and that capitalism is synonymous with free markets, or how would you define it?
With corporatism, and essentially, you know, some people would say that they're essentially the same thing.
Uh-huh.
It is the use of capital to exploit.
Okay. Now, let me ask you quickly. Capitalism was actually a term coined by Marx as a pejorative. Do you believe that capitalism is synonymous with free markets?
That's a very good question. Not necessarily.
Okay, and I guess later down the line, let's just leave it hanging. This will be a question that we can answer later to sort of wrap it up, because I think this is where it's going to be leading anyway. So, you know, in a sort of fair way, I just want to give you the heads up. I have a feeling we're going to be coming to differences of opinion as to what is force, what is theft, what is exploitation, and what is freedom within human interaction. And so when we look at free markets versus capitalism, the defining difference is that free markets exclude government and capitalism does not exclude government. In fact, capitalism, corporatism, mercantilism requires government to be able to get the advantages. And I think many people who are Marxists think that a free market system might devolve into some sort of corporatist, large business exploitation thing. But let's leave that hanging. You understand where I'm coming from on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now,
all right, great.
Marx also predicted globalization. He mm-hmm. predicted that essentially what would happen would be that when there's a labor surplus, wages would go down. But a consequence of this would be that workers who are producing goods and services wouldn't be able to afford the goods and services they were producing.
Okay, can you just repeat that? I just want to make sure. I was just writing down some notes. When what happens? What happens?
I'll repeat this. When there's a labor surplus,
mm-hmm.
wages go down. The knock-on effect is that the goods and services workers produce, workers can't afford to purchase, and therefore credit comes, or usury, becomes a bigger factor in the economy.
Okay. All right. And are there any other points?
We've seen exactly that happen over the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other...
In real terms, mid-rate incomes in the United States have stalled.
Mm-hmm.
The last 10 years here, they've stalled. In fact, they're going down here. Now, of course, one of the reasons for this is that when China and India sort of joined the global economy,
mm-hmm.
that created a huge labor surplus.
Yeah. Okay.
That is the cause, and this is what Marx predicted.
Okay. So let's check on this. Are there any other points that you wanna go to?
Yeah, I mean, let's get a few things straight. Marx did not necessarily advocate the state ownership. He said the people should own the means of production. What he meant by that was that there should be cooperative-owned businesses. Essentially, if a person has a say in a business, do you really think that... A car manufacturer would suddenly relocate from Detroit to India or China if the people working there had a vote on whether to do so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's that kind of logic.
Okay. Can we? I'd like to, because your last point. I've got three major points here. Your last point about the ownership of property is probably the largest abstract concept that we need to deal with, and I think it really helps pierce the veil. It leads into a calculation problem, which is inherent within Marx. So I'd like to leave that as the biggest one towards the end, perhaps. And that also sort of ties in thematically, so if I think with a lot of the fears and questions that people have about the free market and the fears and questions people have about Marx. So we can sort of leave those hanging for people to make their own decisions about these things. But I would like to just quickly mention, you mentioned first off the feudal system. And you've probably heard me bring up on the program that in my studies and analysis of Marx, I came to realize early on that Marx was very, very deft. Either he was intentionally deft or he didn't realize just how efficient he was at, and this is one of the reasons why Marxism has been so successful as a popular philosophy in Europe, and it has taken longer to become popularized in the United States. Because in Europe, Marx was successful in displacing the hatred that people have, the dislike they had of the feudal system, and supplanting it with the owners of the means of production as the feudal lords, which is exactly what you said. I mean, that you sort of walked right along the lines that I've always said Marx was very successful in that, and I think obviously it must resonate with a lot of people when they read Marx. But the way I see it is, there are some questions that need to be asked about the inherent differences between a feudal system and a free market system. Even a semi-free market system with competitive enterprise. And if we are looking at a feudal system, we know that the feudal lords, the landed gentry, they gain their land, their titles, from the royalty, their connections to the royalty, their connections to blood, or things they've done for the royalty. So they are connected.
Well, they obtained it by false gardener.
Exactly. They are connected to thieves and people who are exploiters who have obtained their power over the land ownership through force, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, in a marketplace, is it proper to characterize people who are successful in business and gain market share? And I'm clearly defining only those, not people who gain market share through government ties or anything like that, but people who have grown their businesses, people who through the division of labor were very good at what they did and grew. Is it appropriate to characterize those property owners who have vested their time and the energy given to them as their own property as somehow akin to feudal lords?
That's a very good question.
Yes, and it's something Marx never, ever, ever wanted to answer.
I'm going to try. I would say that there is a problem in the fact that the proletariat... Oh, God, I am now sounding like Marx, aren't I?
No, it's great. It's fine.
...are forced to be wage slaves.
Okay, all right. Do you want to say anything else? I don't want to jump in.
And therefore, it doesn't give them a negotiating... a means of negotiation because they're forced to have to actually work.
Right. Now, and this is a very interesting point.
Certain businesses, they might not want to work for.
Okay. All right. This is a very, very, very key point. And I've touched on this a little bit, and Stefan Molyneux has touched on this a little bit, because to me it's very interesting. Morally, let's say one accepts that idea, which I don't, because there are some other factors that we need to think of that color one's perception, I think. Morally speaking, does the fact that nature requires us to have to work, I think those of us who are dealing with political, socio-political economics, if we can combine all those things, would you agree that there should be a distinction drawn between the things that we are forced to do in order to survive because of nature and the things that we are forced to do by other people, by those people making their own choices that arbitrarily could affect us in a harmful way? So in other words, the vicissitudes of nature, are those things that we can then say are part of the exploitative process, things that we all have to deal with as human beings?
I understand where you're going, but I would like to see if we can, you know, work in a system where we aren't exploited as much. I'd like to see workers and the environment not to be exploited. I do think that we can do that.
Okay, all right.
I think that if workers had a democratic right in the workplace, then I think that would go a long way.
Right,
there
but
are plenty of cooperatives already.
But
perfectly fine.
But this is the thing. We're getting a little bit of field. I just want to stick to this in particular to make sure that we both agree that all human beings are forced to deal with nature. That is why we produce, why we do things, because we want less toil in our lives and more pleasure in our lives. We need to survive, and so we do things. So the fact that we need to survive doesn't mean that another human being is forcing us to do it. Let's just make sure we have that clear, right? Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, beyond that, when we look at business owners, and we say, well, there are more workers than there are business owners, right? Correct?
Yeah.
Okay, now, let's look at a couple of things. First off, the business owners also have to compete against other. So the workers compete against each other to get the jobs. And Marx says that this drives down wages because the owners of the means of production are out there and they will try to continue to keep wages low. Okay.
Yes, because they want to make profit.
Right. Now, the workers compete against each other. The owners of the means of production also compete against each other in many cases, don't they?
Yes.
Yes. I have one more point. And not only the existing owners of the means of production, but there is a possibility that competitors could enter the marketplace, or that if workers are dissatisfied, they could try to work themselves and do it themselves and start their own separate free marketplaces. Correct?
Yes, but I would point out your last point that a lot of people, first of all, aren't enlightened about how to do that.
But that's
they're not able to do that. That's the problem.
Okay.
I'd also say that the problem you have with is essentially when you have a large gap between rich and poor, and I keep going back to this, you are asking, you know, basically that the rich have all the power. Now, what you've got a situation at the moment is you've got these huge mega corporations,
mm-hmm.
right? And they are blocking out, you know, smaller companies.
Right. Well, let's not talk about the way the corporations work now, because the corporations are very tied with government. But I want to continue sort of in this thought experiment, Soph, if we can. So based on what you mentioned about exploitation, I still want to hit on the exploitation thing because it's a very rich vein. So if we look at it and we say, you know, not only are workers competing against each other, but employers are competing against each other. Some people might say, yeah, but still there aren't as many employers. And then I might answer to say, well, yeah, but there's always the possibility that there is another employer that could enter. And, of course, the consumers can turn away.
That was the problem. That's the issue I was trying to raise about corporations. The problem is you've got a situation where you have a lot, you know, a few number of very large corporations, and there isn't much competition.
I understand that, but I'm not talking about the corporate world.
Yeah,
I'm talking about.
I know,
but we're going to get to the corporate stuff in a while. I'm talking about. Remember, I laid this down as a free market with the division of labor and businesses that have grown.
Let me make this straight.
Wait. I don't want to go straying here because we're sticking to points.
I'm going to talk about the free market.
Right, but I want to finish my point though.
Okay. Sorry.
My point is that I understand that people might say that, right? So here are a couple questions, and hold your thought, because I want to make sure that you get that thought in. If we know that the employers and the employees are always trying to turn to the consumer to make sure that they can get the consumer's interest, right, in this world of division of labor and businesses that have started off themselves. Okay, now, would you agree, and perhaps some people might say, as a Marxist might say, yeah, but you know, some businesses just have more advantages. Maybe they're closer to natural resources, or they, you know, the person behind it is incredibly bright or was trained in a certain way or something like that. Some natural advantages, right, that would make the employer have some sort of advantage in being able to produce his stuff better. Well, let's say that's possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so maybe a Marxist might say, so that would mean that he could exploit people because he's so good at what he does, he can capture the market, and so on and so forth. Let me ask you this question. Are workers also different in their skills and abilities?
Yes.
Would it therefore be the responsibility of the dictatorship of the proletariat to then make sure that people of different skills and abilities have to do only up to a certain amount of work, and that they then have to do the other work or give up their jobs to the people of lower skills and abilities because they would be taking something from them?
Good question.
Are they exploiting? Are they the owners of the means of their own production? Are we all not the owners of the means of our own production? And would Marx's ideas then have to apply to every difference that people show?
No, because do you have an equal say in your workplace?
That's my point, is whether or not, as he says, the dictatorship of the proletariat will redistribute the private property. Because if it does, we all have a property in ourselves, and we have different skills and abilities. And if you want to reduce the logic, yeah, Marx can't answer that question.
I've heard this argument before. What I would say is, like, we all have different skills and abilities, right? Because we're all different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but it doesn't mean that one person is better than another just because they're different.
No, of course not. That's not the point. That's tangential.
Therefore, everyone should be equal.
But what I'm saying, you're just bringing it right around. Functionally speaking, Soph, how do you do that?
Well, I've told you, everyone should have a democratic right in their workplace.
But I'm not even talking about in the workplace. It's even beyond the workplace. It's your own skills and abilities. What I'm saying is, you are your own workplace. You only have a certain amount of time on the planet. You apply your skills. If you have greater skills than someone else and can be more productive than someone else and end up starting to do better than someone else, then are you an exploiter? Are you a person who's gaining at someone else's expense, and you should have that redistributed? Because you cannot have private property in Marx's view. It has to be handled by the dictatorship of the proletariat.
Right. There is another argument for the redistribution of wealth, and I told you about this one last week, and it is that essentially, as I've pointed out, that when you have a gap as we have between rich and poor, it gives the rich the advantage to exploit the poor. So the idea is, if you have a redistribution of wealth, it evens up the playing field a bit.
The
redistribution of wealth is the spread of power.
Uh-huh. And
right? Okay, that's the logic behind it. Now, yeah. Obviously, I know that you're morally opposed to this by force, but you know, exploitation will continue. Mm. There is some means of redress in that regard.
Well,
I would say.
Let me ask you, not only morally, but functionally, so who determines what will be distributed and how much?
Well, I guess you have to reach some sort of consensus. I hate to use the word democracy, because the trouble is people mistake democracy. They think democracy is 51%. No, it's not. Democracy is a consensus.
Within what? Society? Or would there be a polis here?
Well, I mean, the only way you're ever going to get, you know, any decent amount of socialism is if you do it from the ground up, so therefore it has to be done at a local level.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I'm not advocating for big government here.
So are you talking about a polis when you're talking about the local level? Do you mean a local government?
Yeah.
Okay, so what you're saying is you would have some sort of plebiscite within a local government, and that plebiscite would decide who gets what?
Yeah.
Okay.
It should be up to every community.
So it should be a small community Marxist thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what if one community has more than another community?
Well,
certain natural resources, or you know, they have access to a lake.
I'm tempted to say I don't know. I honestly, I don't have the answers for everything, dude. But I mean, obviously, when that comes, when you have a problem with that, then a Marxist is likely to say, well, there needs to be some sort of overarching, you know, means of arbitration to sort these things out. I'll admit, I don't have all the answers. And I mean, the trouble is, I'm treading on eggshells here, because as soon as I say, you know, there needs to be centralized government, I know that that I'm going to get it.
Well, let's talk about hypothetically. Let's say, because you know, you hit upon a sort of variant of the Marxist idea.
I'll be honest. I think that you know, local is better. Simply because we've seen large state socialism. Okay, I mean you could say that it works in Scandinavia, but the Scandinavian countries actually have rather small populations.
Okay, well the funny thing is that Marx said that his concept could not work until it had taken over the entire world.
Well, he wasn't right about everything.
No, he wasn't right about much. Sorry to say, but he was also incorrect about human nature. Because let's take your example of the small community making sure that there is no private property, that everyone works together for the common good, from each according to his abilities to each according to his means, right?
Well, it's needs, yeah.
Yeah, okay. They tried that in the Plymouth Plantation in America, in the colonies.
Right.
And have you read the notes of Governor William Bradford?
Yeah, I've heard the stories, yeah.
Right. Now, what Governor William Bradford said was, we tried the Platonic ideal. And the Platonic ideal was, in essence, exactly what Marx was shooting for. Except he didn't have the philosopher kings. He wanted the philosopher kings replaced by all the workers. But it was still forced. So the people there had to share everything they raised. And what Governor William Bradford said was, we almost starved to death. Productivity went way down. People resented having to do work for other people. Some people became slothful. Some people were doing things they weren't good at.
Yeah, I've heard this many times. It's the argument against communism. And I'll point out, I'm not a communist. The idea is, if a person is happy in their work, they will work. And
is that up to the plebiscite to decide, or should it be the individual?
Do you know, dude? I don't know. All I know is that there are cooperatives at work. I mean, I can give you a whole list of them.
Right, but those are voluntary. Those are voluntary.
Yeah, no. I mean, one thing you might not know about Richard Wolff is actually he's not a big fan of government regulation. He doesn't trust it. He said of the Glass-Steagall Act, he said that, you know, he said as soon as it was brought in, the banks were trying to get around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
what's the point?
Yeah, because for him, they don't go far enough in completely destroying private property. See, I know what this guy's like. I had professors just like that guy.
Yeah, but I kind of like his. I do like the fact that he's quite sarcastic sometimes.
Yeah.
He says that he takes his cues from Richard Pryor.
yeah, you got to admire that. That's cool.
I saw an interview with him. He said, "Yeah, Richard Pryor was an inspiration for my lectures." So, yeah, look, I mean, I don't have the answer for everything. You should also remember that Marx wasn't just an influence on Lenin. I mean, the problem is what people have come to know as Marxism is actually Marxist-Leninism, mm-hmm. which, of course, was adopted in the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. Marx, you know, I would go, but, you know, libertarian socialists, or otherwise known as anarchists, also refer to Marx. Mm-hmm. They believe in a voluntary form of Marxism. That is the difference. And Marx, you know, though Marx, I think, did advocate for a large state, I would say that there are many people who read his stuff and said, well, no, actually, that wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know the answer. Look, my position is this. I don't like seeing people get fucked. Okay, that's as simple as that. I believe in social justice. I'm a disabled person. I'm a transsexual, and I'm also a Jew. And I have seen minorities get screwed time and time and time and time again for no fault of their own. Because, you know, and I just don't want to see it anymore. I don't want to see disabled people being killed because they're having their welfare taken away.
Well, okay.
That's what I do. Look, I mean, I know that you're really into ideology and stuff. That is essentially, you know, what I'm about. I just don't want to see people hurt. Now, you could say, okay, this is because, you know, your former friend Ziggy, you know, decided to take some hormones and has lost my testosterone. Yes, that's true, and it does make me more compassionate. But it's also, as I said, it's also to do with my own personal situation. Yes, I do, you know, this is about my self-interest, and I know that that is a criticism of libertarians towards socialists, that, you know, it's, you know, the reason people are socialists is because of their own self-interest. Yes, I wouldn't deny that, but it's not just for my self-interest, it's for the self-interest of those around me.
Mm.
You know, well, those other people I see, the sick, the disabled, you know, I personally, and I will say this, you know, I don't think people should be having to worry about, you know, paying the medical bill if they've got cancer.
Mm. Well, as Marx made it pretty much impossible to be able to calculate what the medical bills would be because he doesn't allow for private property to operate a price mechanism. So you're going to have a lot of problems if you want to get health care, especially when the doctors aren't going to be paid what they think they ought to be paid for their service, but they'll be paid what the plebiscite thinks they should be paid. The other thing I should mention is that when you mention voluntary Marxism, what you're talking about is not Marxism. There's no such thing as voluntary Marxism. Let's just make sure we get that straight. Never in the history of Marxist thought is there such a thing as having the voluntary dictatorship of the proletariat. Doesn't happen.
Oh, but there is. As I said, cooperatives are...
Cooperatives are not...
Sorry, are in the business.
Cooperatives have nothing to do with Marx's concept of how you reach the just society. Cooperatives are free market, voluntarist conclaves that have nothing whatsoever with the polis concept as Marx believed
well,
you could reduce
you
it.
Why is it that every Marxist advocates for cooperative businesses?
Well, I have no idea, but they're not Marxist businesses. They're not Marxist businesses because the only way you can have a Marxist business is if there's no, not even a group of people who could own the business. You can't own anything. Because the minute somebody or some group tries to own it, you immediately come to a logical negation where some other person or some other group is going to try to own it. Unless you have a respect for the concept of voluntary private property recognition and individual ownership of oneself and one's own skills, you cannot get to any sort of agreement about what is going to be a group-owned thing or what's going to be even voluntary. You can't even tell what's voluntary anymore. You have to have private initiative to decide for volition to be in the system, and Marx doesn't allow for that. It's impossible. It's a literal impossibility.
All right. Well, I think we should leave it there.
I think this is fascinating. And you know what we can do? If you're ever interested down the line, we can come up with a couple other points and maybe talk about some of that stuff, too. you know, like a, you know, like 3 or 4 months from now or whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
Sound good? Does that sound cool? If you want to. I mean, only if you want to. You know?
Oh, yeah, okay.
All right.
We'll see.
All right,
well,
cool.
Anyway, folks, be seeing you.
Be seeing you.
Never halt if they